Yeah, welcome back to World Review Commentary. We don't have the normal cues that we normally do. This is an expanded program. It's a full 4 hours this morning, normally 10 to 12. We're going 10 to 2. And welcome back, Charlotte Littlefield Brown, my co-host.
Thank you, George.
And welcome back, Alan Watt.
It's a pleasure.
This encryption, I came up with that idea before I discovered you years ago, that language is encrypted purposely, is it not?
It is. The whole alphabet, in fact, is encrypted. Every letter, every number as well is encrypted.
We think it's plain text, though. They teach us it's plain text, right?
Yeah, everything is a building block. Everything is a structure. If you start looking at it from that perspective, you start to see what it is.
And a perfect example is, like, you talked about government actually means something, but the word Congress is actually sexual intercourse.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, well,
I think they've done a lot of that up there in Congress, haven't they?
Well, they used to use
it's an orgy
that,
of...
Yeah, oh, yeah, they have their orgies, but they used to use that for even dialogue. It used to be called verbal intercourse. It was intercourse. And
yeah, so true.
I'd like to have intercourse with you, and it had no bad connotations at one time.
Yeah. Boy, I tell you, that, you have, and, you're interesting there, Alan. You're very interesting. We got to laugh a little bit, otherwise we'd go crazy, right?
You do, yeah.
We need a little levity at times, right?
We certainly do, yeah.
Alan, tell me again the roots of the word government.
Well, it contains words. Even Verne, you find the word ver and Verne crop up all the time. It's to do also with light from ancient times. You have a very light, for instance, V-R-I. That's literally the one that you shoot up in the sky, it bursts up in the sky, and the soldiers use it. Some of them have little parachutes. And whenever you see certain words, within words, you are looking at a coding. But you're also looking at the letters. Big difference between the capitals and the small letters, the common letters. Because, you see, every letter is a building structure. Remember, this is all built. Even the Masonics, they call themselves Freemasons because they use the architectural language to get their message across to members. And so when you look at anything with power, it's a building structure. And if you look at even the letter A, the letter A has different meanings, but it's also your pyramid. It's also your compass that you see in the compass and square. But it's a capped pyramid as well. You understand?
So the profane don't know this. Is that right?
They're not taught any of it.
They're not. We're the profane. The public, the masses are profane, right?
Yes. So you have one conditioning for the profane, those in the darkness. That's what it means. And those who can see. Now, some can see naturally, very few. Others are taught these kind of facts, these truths. And so you always have, as I say, the symbol of Alpha and Omega. And they always make their terms to do with anything within the world or the physical. They always call it the feminine. So even though it's a compass, which on one hand, at the bottom level of masonry, it means the compass that encircles all. You are the point, and you make a circle from that point. And so you control everything within that domain, which is yours, the microcosm. Then you also, they also call it the feminine in the higher levels, because anything that's to do with the realm of the physical world of rule is always given a female connotation, because everything comes from the female and all species.
So the Statue of Liberty, is that all tied in all these goddesses on top of our state capitals? Is that what they're saying? Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
What does Columbia mean? Have you ever researched that?
Yeah, Columbia is from the old Latin, and it meant initially a dove. Now, the dove, it also means column as well.
Washington, D.C., right? Washington, District of Columbia?
Yeah, D.C., you go into the French... You'll have this if you speak the word. Never mind spell it, but speak it. And that's why you're under the spell of spelling. You don't recognize you can speak it, even though it's an abbreviation. And it's this, which means 10. It's the binary code again.
So again, my gosh. So.
And even every prayer that you say, and for 2,000 years, you finish with Amen or Amen.
Wasn't that a sun god of Egypt?
That's the ancient hidden god behind all gods.
Okay, so Amun was the higher god.
Yeah.
That's what I've always, I've reached that conclusion years ago. You know what I stopped saying in church when I was still going? I stopped saying that.
Yes.
You know, because I started realizing that we're conditioned into all of this stuff, right?
Yeah, and even in Judaism, too, they'll often use Salah, which also is a Freemasonic term. Because in English, you would say make it so or so mote it be. They use that in all masonry, you know, when they make a decision. They speak the reality into existence by law. They command the law.
So much of these institutions have been taken over and manipulated. Is that what you see?
I personally think that they were never taken over. I think there was always a high level of the curia, even within the Catholic Church. Remember that the Catholic Church came into existence as Rome, the physical force of Rome was falling. It was falling because they taxed all their provinces, their conquered countries, into the ground. And it still wasn't enough money to keep the small elite in the luxury they wanted. So the elite moved on. But not before they did alter, they changed the hats of all the temple priests. And the high priest of Jupiter simply became the first, basically, bishop. And this has changed hats. And they called it universal because all of the ancient religions, the ancient world, remember, Rome was very tolerant, as all empires were, to all religions. They accepted all religions. As long as you bowed down and worshipped the king or the emperor, that was okay. But you could worship all the other gods as well. And when they added Christianity into that mix, and Constantine, he actually had a temple built after he had the big speech made at the meeting in 325 AD, he had a temple made to himself where his likeness was made. That was made a statue of himself, and the common people could go in and worship him as a god, like all previous emperors. So he had insurance policies in every religion. He also belonged to the cult of Mithra. So the universal church incorporated gradually all of the old pagan religions back into itself as the centuries went on.
The book, The Two Babels, is that a good reference book to use that delves into these subjects?
It's good, and it's to me, it's a light delving into, although to most people, a lot of it is very new. It doesn't go into it in great detail, to be honest with you.
But it's a primer. It could be a good primer,
it's
maybe.
It's a primer, and his main focus was mainly appearing to attack just the Catholic Church, forgetting that the Protestant Church was just a spin-off.
Yeah, the Anglican Church is where he's coming from, attacking the Catholic.
Yes, an Anglican Church is just the same structure and institution, using all of the same holy days, same names, terms, and so on, except that the Queen is the head of the Anglican Church, and then the Archbishop runs it for her.
What's your take on the Celtic Church of Ireland, the church that preceded the Catholic Church there?
The Celtic Church had direct missionaries going in within the first 100 years of Christianity. There was contact there before Christianity.
Yes.
And the priests who came in bringing Christianity into Ireland were primarily Egyptian. They were from Egypt, and they brought a lot of the symbols with them. That's why you see the Celtic cross with the sun symbol over the cross, the standard Celtic cross at the graveyards. And the only place you find that, the other places in Egypt.
Wow.
And the Catholic Church tried for centuries to get their missionaries in to take over, to push this other group out, which were primarily Gnostic.
I see. Today, we have the Boston Tea Party going on, right?
Yes.
And this is an anniversary of that actual event. And yesterday was the Bill of Rights Day.
Mm-hmm.
What was the problem between the colonists, the American colonists, and England that precipitated this American Revolution? And was there really, was there more of a treaty, you know, that was agreed on, and the money system was still dominantly British? Or what is your take?
Yeah,
there?
It's very interesting. I mean, Franklin too wrote about this himself after the fact, and his own writing, and he said that anyone who believes that a few paltry taxes brought on the revolution as being rather silly. He said it took many, many years of preparation for the revolution. the taxation was what the high, they were all Masons, you know, that's well understood even in the writings of themselves. Franklin admits it. He said that they used that for the common people to rally them around them, the fact that they were going to get taxed. And the standard policy of Britain when they took over a country, remember, they just fought, they'd just been fighting the French and clearing the French out to dominate Canada and what became the United States. And so they wanted the citizens who were born and brought up in the colonies, as they call them, to start paying taxes to maintain an army in case the French or even the Spanish came in. And that was the objection. The group within the U.S. want the dominant elite. You already had a dominant minority there of the biggest landowners who got together and formed the first Congress. They had charters to have those massive land tracts, chartered by the British Crown, in fact, those particular guys who comprised the first Congress. So you already had a dominant elite minority, and they, for many years, they brought in gunpowder and ball and all the supplies they would need via France for about 15 years before the revolution began. But they used the taxation as an excuse to rally the people, and Franklin said, how much tea can you drink in a year? You know, don't be silly. So it wasn't to do really with the tea tax.
They dressed up like Indians and went in there and dumped that tea, right?
That's
false flag.
They wouldn't do it today with the prices of tea, I tell you.
Oh, you Canadians or something. You don't drink a lot of tea up there like the British.
Oh, yeah, you do. But so, I'll tell you, though.
I got to remember that. I'll send you some green tea from down here.
Do that. Yeah, do that. Yeah. But I'll tell you, the thing, too, with the Boston Tea Party was it wasn't just that. It was that Britain, and this has always been the case, Britain already had international corporations owned by those who owned Britain. That's the royalty and their hundreds of cousins and uncles and so on that ran Britain. And they formed the British East India Company, the first corporation in the 1500s. Elihu Yale, that gave you Yale University, was one of the founding members. And the whole thing was they wanted to monopolize the market and make sure that the only tea you could buy was through the British East India Company.
Yeah, that
was really what was behind it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah,
monopoly.
Those families in Boston, they were their dominant traders, weren't they? Part of the British East India Company, those shippers there.
Lots of them. Lots of them were indeed. Yeah.
And what did they do? They took. They traded to the east in China, and they brought slaves to America or to the Caribbean, and then picked up cotton and took that out to India, and then they took some of that, you know, gold into, or the opium, I guess, was into China later, I guess, wasn't it?
Later on, all the members of the Yale University, again, Elihu Yale in his writings stated before the revolution, says, we are creating this university here because the future leaders who will always run this country will come from this university, and therefore our plan will go ahead unimpeded.
Well, is it the skull and bones? That's really what they represent, huh?
That's one branch of this structure. I say there's many names to ISIS. That's what they said in ancient times. ISIS had 1,000 faces, but it was all the same thing, and it hasn't changed. You've been run by corporations from ancient times. They'll give you kings and queens or presidents, doesn't matter. They'll give you a culture, and it always ends up exactly the same. The bulk of the population pay taxes, which is just, remember, the definition of slavery is forced labor and involuntary labor. When money is taken back from you, that represents your labor. You are a slave.
You know, you made an interesting point earlier. You said that this system of rule, like when William the Conqueror set up that Doomsday Book, he was doing the same thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. See? Every pig, every hen, every child, every spoon that you had in the house was
inventoried, right?
Inventoried with a census and owned then by the king. Uh-huh.
And then he put a tax on it. Mm-hmm. And then if you didn't pay the tax, what'd you do? They hung you or cut your head off?
They'd hang you if you're a commoner, yeah.
But then they would confiscate probably all your land, probably otherwise.
Yes, they would. And you find right through the feudal system, backed up by the Catholic Church, you see, the two go hand in glove.
Because the Inquisition, my understanding, let me ask you a question here about the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding was once you were arrested by the Inquisition, then you lost your property at that time. at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So they would target someone that was out of favor, that was not going along with the church, and they would arrest him.
Now, oh, yes, that was common. I mean, it was very common. Technically, under the system, since the Normans came into Britain, and all of the elite who run and own Europe, all their royal families and all their hundreds and hundreds of cousins and so on, all those big families for the last 1,000 years were hand in glove with the churches, and they had a feudal system which the Catholic Church was meant to reinforce. It was ideal for keeping people in the rural areas working on farms and paying their fees. That comes from feudal, few. You pay a fee from few. So you paid about 60% or so of your crops to the baron who was above you, or the lord who took his cut and passed it on up to the king. So you were allowed to keep so much for yourself and feed your pigs and your animals, your family and your helpers, but technically you owned nothing. And you were bought and sold with the land for 1,000
right,
years.
Shadow property, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had a man write a book, John Taylor Gatto, and he says that they started looking at our students as resources. Property,
yeah.
Right?
If you look at Webster, Daniel Webster's writings on education, he even goes through the setting up of it and why they would make it so.
We're going to be right back. We don't know exactly what our break, but sounds like we're coming up on a break here, and then we'll be right back. We'll see how it goes, okay? Welcome back to World Review Commentary. I'm your host, George Butler, along with
Charlotte Brown.
Welcome back, Alan Watt.
It's a pleasure to be here.
These taxes are horrendous. What, 40% of some of these farmers, crops were taken from them?
Oh, yeah. And they were not intensive farmers in those days either, so they didn't have the bigger crops. And that was standard. So that was the definition, really, of a serf. A serf is a nice term for a slave. And most of the people of Europe were up right until the industrial era were serfs. People don't realize that that's not that long ago. And that when they needed, they knew they were going to use science and industry and create industry, an industrial revolution. And it was the Rothschild, Lord Rothschild, introduced a bill into Parliament in Britain to repeal the corn laws, they called it, the protection for their domestic markets for corn. And they dumped all foreign corn all over the European markets, and that put all the small farmers out of business. They were forced into the towns that were just getting built, the cities that became Manchester, Birmingham, Liverpool, and so on. And they were crammed in there to be cannon fodder for the factories. That was all planned.
So you saw with the Industrial Revolution that was taking place, beginning in England and had proceeded, then they didn't need farmers, they needed industrial workers.
That's right, because the empire by that time was so big that there was no problem with the food supply. But they did still keep a lot of the feudal farms. They still exist today. They're called tenant farmers, and the aristocracy still owns them. Prince Charles, there's a blurb in the newspaper a few years ago about shame on you, Charles, because he still had a couple of hundred tenant farmers that grew the food for the royal family. They don't eat modified food. They don't eat meat.
They're probably very healthy, aren't they?
Oh yes, yeah. And he was paying them peanut wages, really. So they still have these farms for the wealthy elite throughout Europe.
This system is so insidious at times. With what are the other mechanisms besides? Well, there's taxes and there's interest and there's insurance premiums and. What other costs are involved in extracting from the individual that place us in slavery?
Well, the definition of a citizen is the one that they get you to. See, they always get you to want something that they want you to want.
Okay. In other words, create the desire for their goods and services.
Yeah, well, even the term citizen, the definition means someone who's born into a system with pre-existing duties to that system, to serve that system. And that's the term that they used to justify slavery under different terms, same thing. Jefferson went through it very well. He said that if a generation is born into a system where their forefathers incurred debts that this next generation would have to pay off. That generation were therefore de facto slaves.
There's this debtor's prison that arose in the United Kingdom in Britain.
Yeah.
That was finally abolished, but that was something else, was it not?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, it's a big... See, the law business is a make-work project for lawyers and judges. It's a huge business, and always was. And they couldn't get enough people to colonize the Americas and Australia and other countries, and so they just threw out laws every single day, silly laws, until you couldn't help but break them. And again, they created poverty because the food shot up because of the restrictions on food and all the farmers going out of business. And so they were sending boatloads of people over to the Americas who had been fined guilty of maybe stealing a loaf of bread or something. And that got you deported. And then you were bought at the other end. The first slaves into the Americas were white people. And
were they indentured servants? Is that right? Indentured?
The person who bought them off the ship paid part of their fine. The captain took a cut. He passed it back to Britain. The magistrate or judge got his cut for it too. So it was a huge business. And you know that yourself, Jefferson, or Franklin's first wife, he bought off the boat. She was an indentured slave.
Hey, I've got a quote from Benjamin Franklin that shows up on Pearson Education. That's out of the UK.
Uh-huh.
The only thing more expensive than education is ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this is the biggest educational publisher in the world, Pearson is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, and they're using Franklin's deal, and it's all misconstrued. It's all a bunch of hodgepodge hustle. Is that way you sort of see it?
Well, yeah, it is. They always give us our heroes, and they always give you foundation. When any country that's formed, they give you a foundation myth. And so you had Romulus and Remus for Rome, and you have the founding fathers that were somehow more altruistic and more holy than the average person, if you were listening to the modern diatribes on them. So you whitewash the realities because you must get the people to almost worship the foundations of your nation. And when you go into the histories of Franklin, now he had relatives in England. He was trained from a very early age, which is standard for this kind of process, by his uncles, who made about three or four trips across the Atlantic just to train young Benjamin for his role in the world for the future. So he was a Mason from the beginning, born into the family.
So they have these cults of personality they present to us, so we'll start worshiping these guys, right?
Yeah, all the books of little quotes and sayings that Benjamin Franklin gave out, he bought them, Little Richards and so on, he bought them, or they were sent to him by the early Masonic organization in Britain. They sent him. He grew up learning this stuff. It was all sent to him. And
you know,
he himself, even though he talked about never a borrower or lender be, he himself, when he went over to England, borrowed about £40 from another fellow, which he never paid back. So they're awful hypocrites.
They can be, can't they?
One of my favorite quotes is actually a Benjamin Franklin quote. At least I think it is. It's he talks about he who would give up liberty for some security will end up with neither, or deserves neither.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you think he? My take on him is that he genuinely felt strongly about this country, and he was genuine. He may have been, involved with these other levels of higher scientific control, but I don't know. Maybe he got a conscience like John F. Kennedy did and had a genuine love for this country. What about the church? You guys, there was a time all they had to learn out of was the Bible, right? You hear these stories of, well, they taught themselves to read but with just the Bible. And isn't it odd that it's, just the Bible was available and nothing else at times in human history?
That's one of your clues that they had a special purpose for America.
Yeah, so the Bible, the founding... So do you think Jesus was a real person that they manipulated the story, the God story, or what's your take on it?
We know that the Jesus story is ancient, predating Jesus. It's the same story
Yeah, the Christ.
The Christ or Messiah, the one who is, brings the light. He's the light of the world.
The anointed one.
Sure. Well, there's a good movie, Zeitgeist, right? And on the beginning of this Zeitgeist movie that's floating around the internet, it shows about, 10 examples of the Christ prior to Jesus. And they're all born on December 25th. They all had the three wise men, which is a reference to
Orion's belt in the zodiac,
exactly. And there's all that. Do you think that was an origination ultimately from these people, or was this a real human phenomena?
All we have are a few sources, mainly Judaic sources. Ironical, because the Judaism went completely against later on, at least, Christianity. But there are a few sources. We know there were different messiahs at that time. It was quite common to have a messiah pop up here and there. And under Judaism, anyone who worked towards the great work of Judaism was technically a messiah. It wasn't just to be one only.
And that's the, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's that cabal, or the, that tree of knowledge, the mystery schools.
Tree of life is Kabbalism.
Mm-hmm. And that was the great work that you're referencing?
It's more than that. Judaism is an active religion as opposed to a passive religion where everything's done. In Judaism, you work the future into existence.
Hey, we're going to cut out of here in a second. We'll be right back. Thank you very much.
The freedom message.
Waking up people everywhere.
I'm Ron Paul, and you're listening to We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Review Commentary. I'm your host, George Butler, along with
Charlotte Brown.
Welcome back, Alan Watt. Let me ask you one question here. This might cut to the heart of the matter. Are you saying that actually we live in a virtual reality?
It is. It's a virtual reality. If you give a reality to all mammals, whether it's animal or human, are warned by an adult, a parent generally, of what is dangerous to its own survival. And if that mammal, that adult, does not warn it, the youngster will grow up thinking that everything that already exists is quite natural. And look at it today, where they've trained children, they're training them at the moment through cartoons and so on, that brain chips are coming and they're going to be great for them, they're going to enjoy them. You look at the moral changes in society over 50 years. 50 years ago, the family was normal. Today, it's unnormal to have a two-parent family. Anything can become normal, and that's the art of culture, creation, and alteration. Plato talked about it thousands of years ago. It was well understood then that the general public, every generation that grows into, is born into its own time. And if the parents don't stop and tell them, look, it wasn't always like this, and there's powers creating what you think is not natural, if you don't tell the child that, the child will never clue into it. Everything is normal.
In addition to that cultural change or conditioning, how about a real physical change in the DNA? Is that possible?
I think it's not only possible, I think it's already been happening from the first inoculations that we ever had. The modern people from the 1950s onwards have a much lowered immune system, number one. It's like a detective story. You must simply go through what's happened. And the only things that happened were inoculations came out big time at very early ages. Before your immune system was even working properly, you were getting pricked with all these needles, and everything is based on faith. Even the doctor has no ability to analyze this polio vaccine or that particular shot or other. He has no ability to do that. It's all taken on faith. And yet, since the 1950s, even the sperm count of the average male in the West is down by 75% of what it was from 1950. Nothing happens in nature at such a speed. What has happened to alter it? What's different? Inoculations are different. Your food is modified too. You see the effects of that. So we're being bioengineered already.
Do you think that some of this is intentional? Does it take on an even ominous basis when just the dynamic of money making creates a, even a greater impetus in this direction?
Both are connected in the sense that we are the herd. In every ancient religion, they always gave you a leader who was the good shepherd, which meant that the followers, the masses, were all sheep. Well, the shepherd doesn't keep the sheep as pets. The sheep are a herd. They have a purpose, and that's to feed the shepherd. That's the only purpose they have. And when you understand from that point of view, the shepherd must profit from the herd, but he also has the right to kill them down, cull them down when there's too many, or breed them up if there's not enough. And that's what's been happening with us. There's lots of books being put out by the big foundations for over 100 years on the necessity of bringing back things like the Black Plague, of sterilization of the public. That's why you had the American Eugenics Society. It's now got a nice name. It's called the Bioethics Council. And they wanted to reduce the sperm count in the male. They wanted to bring in diseases that would affect the ovaries of female and make them infertile. And voila, we've had all of that happen in 50 years. That's not by coincidence. And if you took all the data that's out there on all of this into a court of law, with the presumption that the guilty person will never admit to guilt, then what you make your verdict on, the conclusion you arrive at, is to do with the preponderance of evidence, and it's overwhelming. Everything that's happened, disease-wise and so on, for the last 50 years, and we see the effects all around us with autism, let's say lowered sperm counts, blocked fallopian tubes through chlamydia infections and all the other infections that came out, that's been done by purpose. That's the conclusion you have to come to.
There have been, what, 90-something microbiologists over the last, what, 6 or 7 years that have died?
Yes, it's a very hazardous occupation these
days.
Was
it Quayle, the Quayle site or someone like that? Stephen Quayle or something like that has a list of all those microbiologists.
Well, we know that the big one that was exposed in the papers was Kelly from Britain, who worked with MI5 and 6. And he was to go to court, and they didn't want him to go to court in case he spilled more beans. But in all of the major newspapers before he was killed, the way he said he would be killed, he said they'd find him in the forest with his wrist cut. And about a week before he went to court, he did, in the previous meeting at the court, say that he worked in a project to do with bacterial warfare, with a partnership from Israel and Britain, the Port and Downs facility in Britain, and the stuff that they worked on was race-specific, ethnic-specific viruses and bacterium. They could target certain types within the population, release things which would kill them.
Well, Kinetic Corporation privatized out of that Port and Down industry two-thirds of their industry into their own hands.
You'll find that all, you see, what I came to understand a long time ago was, after reading the early phases of the Cold War, where both sides said that the winners of the Cold War would be those with the highest sciences and technology. It was a war of technology. Then I saw these big corporations sprouting up out of nowhere, and I realized that the CIA and MI6 own and produced and still own the common household corporations' names of the products that you buy, your Sony, their Hitachis, all your big, you cannot allow free competition when there's a war going on in technology. Therefore, you make sure that all technology is owned by your own company, which is basically intelligence.
Ours is not that transparent, but the Chinese system is exactly what you're saying. But it's evident. I mean, it's really on the surface because it's a newer system, right?
Yes. In fact, we created their system.
But I mean, it hasn't had hundreds or thousands of years of building up to where, the West is now. The Chinese, after World War II, Mao Zedong took over. And so they've had like 60 years of build up here.
Yes. And
of years that the West has.
Yeah. The West literally created China. That was planned that way. Russell talked about it in the 1930s. He was sent there, Bertrand Russell. Now, he's a lord, a British lord, standing on and talking on behalf of the aristocracy, who was sent over to start teaching communism in the universities in China back as far back as the 1920s. He writes about it in his own memoirs.
Well, it's individualism versus collectivism. Is it the collective state, world state they want because they can more easily manipulate that? Is that what it's about?
Yeah, the big foundations, which are specialized, each foundation and think tank is a specialist part of the one pyramid, as one structure. And the Club of Rome is one of the main think tanks for coming up with the top ideas and giving them to other think tanks to work it into existence. And they wrote a book called The First Global Revolution back in the 1970s. The two founders of the Club of Rome, who are all interconnected with the big foundations that were, and funded by them, said that they'd studied all of the systems of history on behalf of the elite, remember, and a lot of these members are also members of the Bilderberger and so on. They go back and forth between all these think tanks, including
the Trilateral, the CFR, Bilderberg,
They said that they favored most strongly a world where collectivism would be used for the whole world. You would have a ruling dominant minority running a fascist elite circle at the top with a huge bureaucracy in between running the masses and a collectivist system beneath them.
Okay, we've got a caller here from Carl from, let me kick on this. Carl from Montreal, you have a question for Alan Watt? Let me get this other caller.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Quincy from Pennsylvania, do you have a question for Alan Watt?
It's actually a comment for both of you on the show. It's fascinating. I just wanted to call in and let you both know that this is just so good to hear all these pieces of the puzzle put together so people can understand this stuff. And the movie Zeitgeist is a great starting point for so many people. I didn't want to interrupt the flow of information that was going, but I just want to take a moment and say this is excellent material.
Well, Alan Watt has been at this for a number of years, and I have too. He knows it a lot in more detail than I do. I have an overall view of it, and then Charlotte Littlefield Brown is in there too, digging all the time, and she's right up on this too.
I like to think of these two, they're the professors of the new school, where we learn the mechanisms that we've been controlled.
I'm the profane of the three.
You two are professing.
I'm digging my way out of a hole, right?
And because you're professing, you're professors.
Alan Watt will be right back. Thank you, Kinsey. Appreciate the comments.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Review Commentary. I'm your host, George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, Alan Watt. That was quite a compliment to you.
It was. It was really nice, yeah.
There are people out there that really care. Here's the point I wanted to make before we move on. You know, about our school system is in shambles. The kids coming out of there can't even read what you're writing. You know?
I know. Although, in sequence, I'm just like a sentence. Your subconscious understands them, and I'm getting a good response from the younger ones, too.
My sister-in-law used to give a series of testing. She was testing expert or, you know, teacher or counselor for school system, for public schools.
Uh-huh.
She had to rely on the Lucier color test, if you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a system of 8 colors that can be expanded into a greater number.
Yeah.
But she had to give that at times when nothing else worked to get some kind of a personality readout on some of these people.
And the big problem now, the worry now amongst teachers, although it's the plan, of course, is that because we have the computers, beginning even with calculators, we're losing the skills necessary. We don't think too much for ourselves. We expect other things, including machines, to do it all for us.
I have Wikipedia, right?
Yeah. And, you know, in ancient Greece, too, they bewailed when education was being given more widespread to the public. They bewailed the fact because they said it was detrimental to memory training, because prior to that you had to listen to long ropes of memory and be able to regurgitate it. So the brain is very similar to any other organ. You have to exercise it, And when you don't exercise it, you actually become dumber. There's no doubt about it. Your IQ drops. And you're easily managed by the superiors who understand this very fact. So that's why people are more placid today, even though they should be screaming at the top of their lungs when they see the changes that are coming in such rapidity all around them.
But what is it? Is it the food and some of these inoculations and all that together, the fluoride that's creating some kind of a mesmerized, and the television and the games and the virtual reality?
All of it. The big players in this system talked about, and again bewailed the fact, that they were losing traditional methods of culling the population, going back as far as Thomas Malthus, who was a big top economist for the British East India Company, an advisor to royalty. And they said, we need something to bring back plagues like the Black Death and so on, to cull the population. And we must get ways to make the public's minds lethargic. Lethargic was the term. Now, they were already using that with slaves in their various plantations by testing special diets on the slaves. They wanted them fit enough to do their work, but not too strong that they could walk off from that plantation. And not too bright, and not enough energy to think too much. So they've used food down through centuries for this very purpose. And when you go into the writings of Charles Galton Darwin, in his book The Next Million Years, and he was a physicist, the grandson of Charles, but with the same agenda, it's intergenerational agendas each part of the families have. Charles Galton Darwin talked about the necessity of introducing into the male body something which would reduce the sperm count, and he said maybe put it in the food as well, perhaps put it in the water supply, and perhaps even spray it from the air. Now we're seeing all of these things happening today, and he said that the effects on the female would be to make her more masculine in form, and we're seeing that happen as well. That does not happen in the span of 50 years by itself.
So the acceleration of this scientific managed dictatorship is proceeding on schedule.
Exactly. And that's why Aldous Huxley could write his book in the 1930s of Brave New World, talking about a world to come with purpose-bred happy slaves that would be genetically engineered in test tubes and bred for their purpose. That was not a fictional work. That was predictive programming. He worked, remember, for Tavistock Institute, and his brother was the first head of UNESCO. The UNESCO, the United Nations, is to create a world education so that everyone gets the same indoctrination.
What did he say about scientific humanism would be a mechanism to manage the world in the future, something like that?
What they had to do was to convince the public by using science. In other words, the science did not have to be true, but scientific terminology, after this, through maybe one generation, it used terms that would dehumanize.
So what you're saying, let me make a point real quick here. What you're saying is that this scientific terminology was an encryption system.
It was.
That we could not decipher, but we would translate it into something that was real, but they were using it to induce the virtual reality.
When you are allowed to be convinced that you're coming from one society that believed that life was sacred into a society where you were just another form of animal, you immediately fall off that throne and you're down on the ground with the other animals if you actually believe it. Once you believe it, then they can move in, treat you like animals, and you will not complain because you believe it yourself. You've been trained to believe you're just an animal, and you won't stand up for rights. You won't stand up for other people who are being killed off. And we've had many genocides still ongoing in the world today. And you allow yourself to be killed off eventually, thinking, well, I guess there are too many of us. I'll just accept my fate.
I'm going to be a good citizen that has responsibilities, right?
he talks again, Huxley and others, and Russell and a whole bunch of these guys, that they would bring up a population eventually with a new religion based on a form of earth worship mixed, of course, with science. That's what they meant. And eventually a generation would come forward to be trained from kindergarten, where they would voluntarily put themselves forward to be sterilized, and they would get special privileges.
Well, they were cultivating these young kids in the garden, right? Kindergarten?
kindergarten.
Deutsch, Deutsch term, a German term.
Yeah, and again, Russell led the whole, what's now the modern educational system. He had experimental schools authorized by the British Crown in the early 1900s, where he went through this whole thing. And he said that we the elite, the dominant minority, he said, always thought we'd have to use Plato's idea of removing the children from the mother at birth and the state bringing them up to give them a new indoctrination so they wouldn't be contaminated with old-fashioned ideas and morals. He says, but now we have found that if we can get the child at the age of two with a scientific indoctrination, when that child goes home every afternoon or evening, whatever the parents say to them will wash off them. It will not come into the child, so they'll be contaminated, basically.
So there's more contempt for the parents as a result of this, seems like.
It's the same thing, and what has amazed me, and until I clued into the fact that we created communism, as the dialectic, the communists were going along the same agenda. That was their ideal goal, eventually, to create the Soviet man. And we found that even with the beginning of Israel, most of the ones who flooded into Israel after World War II, and even prior to it, were from the Soviet system. And when you read their books, and I have them all here, written at the time, they left the Soviet system because they said that the communism in the Soviet style was not Marxist enough. And so they started the kibbutzes up, where literally the child was taken from the parent at birth in the early kibbutzes. And they were brought up communally by all the people. But as time went on, they found out that the female's natural instinct remained. You cannot change nature until you change the female herself.
I see.
Which will come. It says because they wanted their children back.
Charlotte's going to have to leave us here at the top of this hour. But Charlotte, tell us for just a second, a few words, what you're going to be doing this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Today, obviously, is the celebration of Ron Paul's bid for the presidency. It's a major fundraiser called the Boston Tea Party. It's being there's parties going on all across our nation. The meetup groups, people getting together, donating to Ron Paul's campaign. And they're doing it to get, you know, more media attention and to make sure he's got enough money for the television advertisements and things like that for the race. So I'm dressing, George, you need to know, I put on the early American dress from the musical drama Give Them a Chance, and it fits, and so
I bet you look great in it, Charlotte.
I look like an early American woman.
You look great in anything.
I don't even recognize myself.
You look great in anything. You could have rags on. You look beautiful to me.
Thanks, George. And I got the bonnet, the scarf, the apron, the whole dress. And when I head out, I'm going down to meet up with a group of other people dressed in early American attire.
Hey,
and,
get some photographs with all those. Get some photographs with all those people, okay?
Yeah, I'll do my best. We're trying to get on the news tonight. So,
okay, that's good.
Now, that's us locally, and, of course, things like this are happening all over the country.
We'll talk to you later, Charlotte. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye, Alan. It was nice listening, and I learned a lot. Thank you.
Put some lemon in your tea. Yeah. Your cold. Good for the cold.
Alan,
am I sniffing that bad?
Someday have to meet Charlotte. She's a wonderful lady. Boy, she's full of energy and get up and go. That my get up and gone is gone. But anyway.
All right, thank you, professors.
Yeah.
professors of the new school.
Okay, little old lady in the bonnet.
Bye, guys.
Hey, bye, Charlotte. Be good now. We're going to come back at the top of the hour and continue our conversation. We're going to open up the phones, too, and see what we can get online to what kind of hard questions they can ask you, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I think you can answer about any of these questions. You've got a vast amount of information and knowledge and insight. We certainly appreciate your testimony and your interview. We're going to be back in just a few minutes, about 1 minute, actually, at the top of the hour. So we'll see you in about a minute, a little over a minute here. Thank you very much.